Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, June 10th, 2013, and you are listening to episode 54. My name is Rob, and I have a stranger in the office with me today, a gentleman I've never met before. He looks a little bit like my normal co-host, but something different about him that I'm not recognizing. I don't know what that's all about. He looks kind of nerdy. He looks kind of, I don't know, I just don't trust him. He looks shifty. Looks shifty, I tell you. So, where'd Jason? Oh, hey.
So what Rob's the other guy referring go? To, this is Rob's referring to is, if you follow us on Twitter, I got glasses recently, just reading glasses. I don't need to wear them for the show, but to be funny, Rob hasn't seen me with them yet. So as he was reading his announcement that he does at the beginning, I put the glasses on to try and make him screw up. And it worked, like usual. Rob's very easy to distract.
And then he took the glasses off, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's so, like Clark Kent and Superman, I know.
Basically, right. So, only it's like Clark Kent and a different Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Because not as impressive as Superman, but, you know.
Clark Kent and a slightly less nerdy Clark Kent with no superpowers.
Right.
So yeah, I like having glasses for reading. It seems to work very well.
Good.
So,
it's good to be able to see things when you need to.
Yeah, and it's getting better. I'm not feeling like dizzy trying to wear them.
Yeah.
At first, I was like, I can't focus. Mm-hmm. My head hurts.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I've been wearing glasses since I was like 11 years old.
Right.
So
my wife's been wearing glasses since she was 4.
Okay.
So
there you go. So welcome to the club.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's a great club to be in.
Somebody I work with was like, yeah, I got glasses for reading too. And I just wore them all the time and now I have to wear them. And I was like, okay, pro tip, don't do that.
Yeah.
All right. I've been very good about it. If I get up from my desk, I take them off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but man, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
It really does.
Good. Yeah.
And not even just for seeing, just for being able to focus on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So focus, reduce eye strain, which probably reduces headaches and all kinds of other stuff. Get all tension in your neck and shoulders when you're not even realizing it.
Yep. And
so relieve all that stuff. That's good.
Yeah.
It's great.
So that's our exciting what you've been doing lately.
Yeah.
I've been getting glasses.
Getting glasses.
Have you been up to anything here?
They're particularly nerdy looking glasses too. Very black, thick black frames.
Right.
Kind of squared off. And
I thought you were gonna mock me for that. And it was funny because when we were trying on glasses, I actually thought of you. I was like,
did you?
What's Rob? Rob's gonna make fun of me about this. But those were the least nerdy glasses I tried on. Steph tried to get me to get the, she liked those, but she also liked the old school 50s ones where they're thick on the top and then it's just the glass on the bottom. It's like the black style.
That's what I have.
Yeah,
but
no.
Thicker than that.
But I'm talking about like the old school, like 50s ones that are rounded and have the really thick black on top, the dots in the corner. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
Like they wore like in the Shawshank Redemption, like that kind of glasses.
Sure, okay.
It just didn't look
right
on my
face. That's too vintage.
They were cool. Like,
no,
I was like,
cool.
These are kind of cool, but not for me.
Okay.
I'm not a hipster. So.
Yeah. Even those are a little bit hipster.
A little.
A little bit.
Again, I looked at one pair that like didn't fit quite right, kind of like that, but they were green. And I was like, this is too much.
Next time you need to go get glasses, which will probably be, I don't know, depends on you. I mean, I usually get a new pair of glasses every 10 years or something. But I bet you even if you go 2 years from now, you will not be able to find a single frame that's even close to what you have right now.
Probably not, yeah.
If frame fashions just changed crazy, and you'll hate every single thing there, and you'll eventually settle on.
Right.
That's how it is for me every time I need new glasses.
Yeah, my wife, Steph, she's went through, you know, since I've known her, she's probably went through 10 different styles of glasses.
And yeah.
It's funny to think back to what she had when I first met her. They were round. I mean, they were very thin, but I mean, they were round and now they're like yours, except for more girl style.
Yeah.
They're long, they're thinner and wider and they have the thick sides.
Yeah.
It's just funny. You
weird
know?
Fashions. I don't get fashion.
As evidenced by the way you dress.
Well, yeah. Right.
Now that I can, I mean, we're pretty much wearing
the exact same thing.
I have a
cargo shorts and a t-shirt, a printed t-shirt.
In like a geeky printed t-shirt.
T-shirt, right.
So
it's a little embarrassing. But hey, we're nerds. That's our comfort zone there.
Yay.
You know?
One more quick thing.
Mine is a black t-shirt. So
mine's
I'm full
brown,
on nerd.
Yes.
So close enough.
Yours is close. And it's a reference to an 80s movie.
Well, it's a Goonies t-shirt. Yeah. So anyway,
you're
go on.
Spoil that. So I stopped at Bigby Coffee on the way here.
Yeah.
So we're going to be recording a couple shows.
A quick plug there for Bigby Coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am actually a huge fan of Bigby Coffee. So I've. Free plug, Bigby Coffee.
Yeah.
The owner of the local store, his name is Raj. He's a pretty awesome guy. But I stopped in one of the stores, and they have these trivia questions they put up. And most of the time, they fall into two categories. A trivia question that I'm like, hey, that's a cool question, you know? Like, and maybe I know the answer, maybe I don't. Or it's a guess. Like, it's a total guess. Like, how many Americans do this per year? And it's four numbers, and there's really no way to make an educated guess.
Sure.
So tonight, I met there. And I'm just sitting there, and it starts out, in the short story by H.P. Lovecraft. I'm like, what? And it's like, blah, 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 lives underwater, monster, and what's its name? And I was like, so I walked up there, and I'm standing there, and the guy finished making a drink, and I'm like, so the answer is Cthulhu. And he goes, dude, that's so awesome. He said, I wrote that last night. He said, you're only the second customer to guess and the only one to get it right.
Nice.
And I was like, really? Because it seems so obvious. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, me too. That's why I wrote it. I was wrong. He said, I had to write a phonetic spelling of Cthulhu because my coworkers didn't understand
how
it
was.
Which, thinking about how Cthulhu is spelled, that's totally understandable.
Sure. If you don't know about Cthulhu.
Yeah.
So. Have I ever told the story? Because I have a Cthulhu fish on the back of my car. Have I ever told the story on the show about when an old lady commented on my Cthulhu fish? Well, I have to now that I brought it up.
Right. You've told me, maybe, but I don't know if I've told the show.
We have new listeners since then. So last year, Gen Con, I got the Darwin fish and the Jesus fish right. The plastic thing. So at Gen Con last year, I got a Cthulhu fish. And it's a little fish, and it has a wing, and it has like tentacles, and it says Cthulhu in it. Stuck it on the back of my car. And I was very proud of myself. I think it's very cool, you know. The first day that I had it, I pull into a parking lot at Noodles & Company here in town, and there's the car I end up parking next to also has one. I hadn't seen one ever, and then the first day I have it, boom, there's another guy with it. Okay, so that's that was kind of frustrating. And then the next day,
she's like, rip it off.
Yeah, I should have. But then the next day, I'm on my lunch break at work, and I'm driving to get some food, and this little old lady in a Prius pulls up next to me at a stoplight, and she kind of does the thing, you know, roll down your window, and I roll down my window, and I smile at her, and she says, what does the little fish on the back of your car mean? And I'm like, oh, this poor old lady, she has no idea. How do I explain Cthulhu?
And like the 3 seconds you're sitting next to each other at a stoplight.
At a stoplight, right. How do I explain the cosmic horror that is Cthulhu to an innocent old grandma who is genuinely curious? How can I encompass this? What do I do?
I don't know what you do.
So I mean, this surge went through my brain trying to think of how to phrase it, what to do. And I was just like, I can't, there's nothing I can do. So I just kind of smiled at her and I just said, it's a comic book thing. And her face fell. Like, she was so disappointed. Like, I had just told her that her dog died.
Like, she thought it was something cool.
She thought it was going to be something so cool and different. And I said, it's a comic book thing. And she was just, she was so disappointed. I felt like a jerk. I felt like a jerk because I didn't tell a little old lady about the cosmic horror that is Cthulhu. So, I don't know.
I'll teach you. Lesson learned next time.
I should have put the car in park and said, well, let me tell you.
Yeah. Said, listen, this is going to be a minute. We'll just go ahead and turn your car.
Actually, why don't we just pull into the parking lot over here and we can have a conversation? Yeah. That's what I should have done.
That would have been your whole lunch hour, dude.
Yeah. Well, she probably would have gotten freaked out and driven away.
Got these tentacles.
Well, you see, he's a god, right? But he's sleeping. He's sleeping under the ocean in the city of Relech. I'm never sure how to pronounce it. Is it Relech?
Actually, I left out of my story.
Yeah.
That it said lived in the underwater land of, and it had that word. And I said, I think it's Rila. And the guy's like, I never know how to pronounce that either. So I just left that out of the story. Okay, but since you brought it up. Yeah.
Right. Well, anyway, I don't even know everything that there is to know about Cthulhu and the mythos, but I know enough to get by as a geek.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
It involves us talking about what we've been playing.
Oh, we're a little off topic. What you been playing, Jason?
Well, lately, this is kind of a not much here, but I've been playing a lot. I've been doing a ton of testing on the game I'm going to pitch tonight.
Yeah.
Like a ton of testing. I've played it probably over a dozen times in the last couple of weeks.
Great.
With several different people. Mm-hmm. I've gotten some really good feedback, and I've got some big questions about it that I have to ask tonight, and I haven't asked you those questions yet.
Okay,
I'm going to ask you the questions. Well, I hinted to it in an email, but I mean, we haven't talked about it formally yet. So, you know, that'll be kind of a good thing for that. So that's what I've been playing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but have you been playing anything that's not made by us?
Well, I've been playing a lot of Frankenstein's Legacy, of course. Now that I've got the prototype back here, I'm trying to play it as much as I can. Only two players, sadly, because I haven't been able to work out any time to hang out with people. And my my day job schedule's been pretty rough lately. So just basically been me and Christine playing it as much as possible here at home. But the other night we decided we'd had enough of that, and we played some Ticket to Ride Europe, which we hadn't played in several months. And dang, man, that's a great game. Ticket to Ride is so good.
I saw pictures of you playing that.
It's
now
so good.
That.
Yes, it's so good. I love that game very, very much. And I've only played Europe. I haven't played any of the other regions.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before, that you've only played
yeah.
Europe.
But it's just so good, and I was this close, like, man, we got to the end of the game, and I made all my routes, and I was like, yeah, I'm just going to, because my wife always beats me, right? Christine will always murder me at every game that we play. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
She's really good at this stuff.
Last time we played games.
She just wiped us all.
What did we play?
What did we play?
We played a couple of games. We played Four Taverns that one time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was like a few times ago when we played, but she beat us at that.
Yeah.
What was the last game we played, though? It was one of our games,
I think it was, yeah.
Was it Frankenstein?
It might have been Frankenstein,
but she destroyed us.
Yeah. She does every time. I don't know. She sharks us, I guess. I don't know. She's so innocent. Nah, I don't know what's going on.
She's like, I'm not sure what I'm doing. She's like, domino, boom. She breaks the table and she wins, no matter what game it is.
No matter what. Yeah. And then
playing Catan, domino, bam. That's how she wins.
Yeah. That's her thing. That's her MO. Anyway, so she, I was like, yes, I'm finally going to beat her. This is going to be great. Oh, I'm just going to smoke it. Oh! And I get to my, you know, my longest route, and I realize I forgot to make the last connection to the last city. I forgot. I thought I'd had it. I forgot which city was my last city. I needed 2 train cars to complete that route. So instead of getting plus 21 points, I got minus 21 points.
And so this sounds more like your fault this
time.
It
was totally my fault, of course. Of course it was. Yeah. Oh, man. I was so close. I tasted victory and then had it ripped from my lips.
And then realized you were terrible and you lost.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, but I mean, I play a game like that now, and I think about how much time and how much effort went into making that game, designing that game, balancing that game, deciding the distance, how many train cars between each of those cities on the map, you know?
Right.
How much time and effort went into this stuff. And in Europe, because it brings in train stations and it brings in tunnels that's not in some of the other versions. And just to implement those mechanics, I mean, I always wonder about that. How much of that is just, well, let's give it a shot, and hey, it worked. Oh, well. And how much of it is carefully calculated? How much of it is you try it the first time and, yeah, good enough, and let it go? Or I had to play test this, you know, 700 times and tweak it a little bit every time just to see what felt the best. Yeah, I always wonder about that for big major games. That's a major game, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I always wonder about how much time and effort went into that kind of stuff. And
I'd always like to know how they do their first crack at it. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I do it two ways. Like, sometimes if I've got a lot of time in an Excel spreadsheet, like, mm-hmm. I'll sit down and I'll figure out percentages. Like, okay, what's the percentage of this number of cards I want to have in the deck? Mm-hmm. And other times, I just guess.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you guess, it turns out perfectly. And you're like, how did I do that? I just guess.
Other times it doesn't.
Sometimes it does. Well, sometimes you can spend hours calculating on a spreadsheet and it still doesn't turn out good.
I do that a little bit. I use Excel to kind of set up my card lists, but that's only because it kind of helps me stay organized, not because I'm going to do any math.
And I actually learned that from you. I was doing that in Word and you were like, I do this in Excel. And I was like, that's freaking genius.
I just like it for the organization is all. But anyway.
I try and do the percentages with things like with water balloon washout. I was like, I need a certain percentage, and off the top of my head, I don't remember, but a certain percentage of cards, I think it's actually 56% of the cards should be attack cards.
Mm-hmm.
And 44%, right? Yeah, 44% should be defense and utility cards, like other stuff. So that way, more than half the time, mm-hmm. you should have attack cards in your hand. Like, you know, because that's what drives the game. So
sure.
And that math has worked for me since day one.
Like, that's great.
That was my first guess, and I was right.
That's great.
But I've had other games where like the Explorers game we talked about. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had to retweak the numbers on that like probably 5 or 6 times. And sadly, I spent 3 days
mm-hmm.
going through trying to figure out the percentages that I needed, and it still was completely jacked up. The one thing that I did do with the percentages that worked well was the map, how you draw the map and you have the colors and you have to pick the sides.
Yeah, yeah.
As you know, too, that plays beautifully.
Like, yeah, yeah, that's great.
You can generally make a map mm-hmm. because the
colors...
But
not always.
Not always, but I mean, you know, on average, you can make a map. And it's because because I spent so much time figuring out the patterns to make it match.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for the other, deviations of cards and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Terrible.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just what we talk about before, and what we've learned the hard way really is there's no substitute for playtesting, and that's right. That's the number one rule in what we're doing here, and I'm sure any other designer would agree with us.
Right. That
there's no substitute for sitting down and playing the game as often as possible.
Just picture some designers like, no, I write it. I'm like George Lucas.
Yeah.
I write it. I film
it's
it.
It's gold.
And it's gold. From no one sees it.
Right. From my brain to the page to money, money, money.
To Jar Jar Binks.
Right.
Good times.
It is.
That is.
Yeah. Let's move on. Yeah.
Shall we?
I think we've been rambling a little bit too much for this episode.
All in good fun.
Yeah. Hopefully it wasn't too
painful.
All
in good cutting room floor.
No, it's all gold. Weren't we just saying that's yeah. all gold? Anyway, Mechanic of the Week. It's time for the Mechanic of the Week.
It is.
It's my turn?
Yes.
Right.
I'm like, why are you pointing at me? It's your turn.
Because I like to point. I like to point at things. I'm pointing right. everywhere. I was hoping,
because you came up with this mechanic. So
I did.
This is my idea. I don't know why I'd say it.
No. Well,
it's
anyway.
A sham. The whole show is a sham.
I like to share. The mechanic that I wanted to talk about this week, that it's maybe a little bit more of a component, but...
Well, let's be clear. Past, yeah. present, and future, mm-hmm. mechanics we talk about, folks, are not always mechanics. Sometimes sure. they're features of games, sometimes they're components. We call it Mechanic of the Week because it sounds cool.
Right. Miniatures.
That's stupid. Just kidding. I love miniatures.
You know you love miniatures a lot more than I do.
You know who really loves miniatures?
Who's that?
Kickstarter.
Hey, that's true. Kickstarter loves miniatures.
Yes.
And actually, mainly the people who go to Kickstarter love miniatures.
Yes, yes, yes.
But so I wanted to talk about miniatures as a mechanic in the game. Now, obviously, as their simplest, in their simplest form, they are a pawn, right?
Yes.
They're just a pawn that could easily be a meeple, could be a, you know, a little, I don't know. What do you call the little sorry things? Those are just pawns, I guess, huh?
I think they're just called pawns. I bet you there's some awesome name for them.
I hope so.
Listeners,
let us know. But yeah, okay, so a miniature. So at a basic level, it's just a pawn. It's just a thing to mark your space on a board or in an area or whatever. Okay, it's a token that represents the player in an area. Okay, but they can be so much more than that. The first example that comes to mind, of course, is just the whole HeroClix idea.
Yeah,
you know that they're not just a figure on a board. They also have all that information on the miniature itself, on the base.
Right,
it gives you all kinds of information that enables you to play the game.
Right,
and all the Clix games are that way.
And another, you know, like for instance, if you look at a game like D&D miniatures, it's mm-hmm. not like that. You have a card with it.
Mm-hmm.
But another good example, another WotC game was Dreamblade. Right on the base, it had, uh-huh. you know, like a rule right there. This is what it does. This
sure.
is what this guy does. So yeah, like HeroClix, except for with HeroClix, what's so cool is not only is it the data that's right there,
mm-hmm.
it's changeable.
It's yeah. Right.
I mean, like it changes during the game. And
right.
I've honestly never played a HeroClix game. I've had tons of friends that have played them. I actually have a ton of HeroClix figures that were given to me.
Mm-hmm.
Never played the game. Watched a lot of people play it. Mage Knight was a big one that people
yeah,
played.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think that got discontinued.
It did, yeah.
But
it was around for a while.
Yeah, some of the stuff in that was just crazy.
Yeah.
And that was played on a freeform board.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, another one, it was the MechWarrior minis game.
Yep.
That was just you play it on your table. You don't need any terrain or anything. It's, yeah, right. So, yeah, no grid for that. of course, but see, we're still not necessarily talking about the miniature itself. We're talking about... the base or the click token or the, you know,
right,
that
right.
thing that carries information on it. The next thing that comes to mind for me, which I think really kind of involves the miniature, the figure itself, and sadly this isn't even a miniature really, was the old Shadowrun action figure combat game. Did you ever play that?
I did not.
Okay.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, yeah. It came out, I want to say like 10 years ago, maybe sure. not quite that long ago, but WotC game. Might've been WizKids. I don't know.
Could have been Shadowrun. I think that's WizKids.
Is it? Okay. At any rate, they were selling, Shadowrun action figures. Okay. That were, you know, cyberpunk characters. And they were like, I think they were 8-inch action figures for the
okay,
most part.
So
okay.
Pretty big.
Yeah. Good size. And they had a big round base that they would stand on. And inside the base, it had some dice, came with dice, and it came with, different components that your character could wear. You know, so like one of them was the cyber preacher or something. Okay. And if he's wearing his hat, he gets a bonus to defense. If he's holding a shotgun and a pistol, then he gets two attacks, but maybe he's got a gun and like an energy shield, and then he's got an attack and a defense. Okay.
Yes.
You know, and so different characters had different commotes. They also had like a dwarf hacker. And if you put on his goggles or whatever, then he would get some kind of bonus to hacking or this kind of stuff. So based on what accessories the action figure was wearing changed your abilities in combat. And I loved that game. I thought it was fantastic. But it disappeared. Nobody ever played it. I think probably because they were kind of expensive. In the first line, there were like six figures in the first line. But I loved it. I thought it was super, super fun.
Did you have some of the figures?
I still have two of them. Yeah, I have that preacher dude and that dwarf guy. There were some other ones that I don't remember what they were, but I really dug it a lot. I thought it was super cool. But I mean, that was neat also that by changing the accessories on your character, like physically changing them on your character, it changed how you played the game, what your strategies might be.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, I think it was great. It didn't last long, though. So,
well,
so
I mean, because they're probably selling like $8 a piece or something like that.
They're probably closer to $10 or $12 a piece.
Yeah, see, that's... Right. I mean, granted, there's only six in the first set, right? So that's not that hard. But...
Something like six, yeah. Kind of makes me want to go look it up online now, find pictures of all the characters. But that's the kind of thing, the next step above basic miniatures. But you know, it's using a posable action figure, not just as your place marker, but also as the thing you use to play the game with. So what other ways can we think of to use a miniature in a game other than to simply mark a space, mark a location? Now, I've heard of other miniatures battles games where their orientation matters, you know, for direction of line of sight and things.
I think with HeroClix, that matters.
I think it does,
pretty confident with Mage Knight, it did matter.
Yeah. I know the old Star Wars miniatures battles game, you had like a front-facing kind of pie section on the base, and so anybody attacked from the front, you get a defensive bonus. Anybody attacking from your back, you'd get a minus to your defense, that kind of stuff.
Makes sense.
Again, that's still kind of talking about base features, but that's tied to the direction that the miniature themselves is actually facing.
Right. It's tied to what the miniature is representing.
Right.
So you want to think of other things the miniature could represent other than...
simply holding a space on a board.
See, that's what miniatures do, right? I mean, really... that's why you have miniatures. Even like when I think of Mansions of Madness, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you've got not just miniatures, but you've got little set pieces as well.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. They're holding a space on the board.
That's true.
So to think of them doing something else, you know, I mean, you could have a game you could have a game where you're playing a board game, right? Let's say we're playing Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
And you could buy a miniature
that
goes along with your deck. It's not part of the game, like out there, but like, because in Magic you attack each other. I think you have like 20 hit points, unless they've changed that or something. But
if
you get down to 0 hit points, you lose. But there's other ways to lose, I guess. But
be very dismissive of Magic.
Well, because it's just so overly complex. I'm not even going to try to understand it.
Sure.
I used to play it, but I was never really great at Magic.
No, I suck real bad at it.
But, like, what if instead of you had, like, this avatar in front of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a miniature. Like with the Shadowrun thing, where you can put different items on him and stuff and dress him up, and then that enhances the gameplay. I mean, he's not marking a spot on the board, but I don't think you can get away from that. I mean, that's still basically the functionality of a miniature. I mean, why else would you have a miniature other than to... mark a spot on the board or represent something in the game?
Yeah.
I think those are the same thing. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe they're not. Maybe having it represent something is different than just having it be a spot on the board.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to like destroy our conversation.
No. It's a tough question. It's a tough question. Well, let's see if we can expand out from this then. I listen to a lot of Flip the Table, of course, right? One of our favorites. And a lot of the games, the old 80s games that they play, have big cardboard stand-ups instead of pawns, right?
Yes.
You know? Okay. So what if instead of it being miniature, what if it's a cardboard stand-up, right? And what if it's a stand-up paper doll?
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds kind of girly, but okay.
Well, it depends on what it is, you know? What if a major part of the game is to add new pieces of equipment, clothing, whatever, kind of the same thing as this, as the action figure idea, of course, but adding different pieces of equipment onto that paper doll might give you bonuses or something. Or, okay. Let me go to this. Okay. So we take this paper doll idea. We go back to my tattoo game idea from a long time ago. What if the point of the game is to put tattoos onto this doll and to cover the entire figure head to toe in tattoos? And so, and that's your goal. So it's, I mean, well, and then it's kind of just the same thing as like filling cards on a board or filling spaces on a board.
Then,
but
then it might as well be a tableau, right? Instead of a...
Yeah, it'd be cooler though if it was standing up.
Well, it would be, but I'm just saying, what's the point?
Yeah, it's still basically a tableau and not anymore miniature.
What you described though, of having a paper doll, you put a bunch of stuff on that changes it. I'm thinking The Sims board game.
The Sims board game.
I don't know if there's a board game for The Sims, but okay. If there was,
this is what you're imagining.
That's probably what you would do. So, I'm trying to think of a reason why you would want to dress up your character. Oh!
Okay.
We always like to talk about heist and or spy games.
Yeah. It's one of our favorite go-tos.
It's just easy fodder. It's always easy to think of something. What if you're using disguises?
Okay.
And so the things you put on your little standee and or your paper doll or whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
is different disguises. So not just like, I have a pistol now, but it's like, I'm dressed like this now. I've got the military uniform on so I can sneak into the base.
Okay.
I don't have a game to go with that, but there's a use for it. Mm-hmm.
Still feels kind of forced.
Oh, totally feels forced. Yeah, I mean, there's no way around that. I would, if there is a listener out there that has an idea, this is what I wish we were like a live show, right? Like,
yeah,
this is why Jen kind of be cool.
Like, right. Call in. Shout it out.
Just yell. You know, I can't think of a way to use miniatures other than what we described.
Yeah.
As in them being a placeholder. But part of me feels like that's just because that's intuitive. Like, duh, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to think of some other sort of... Okay.
Okay, you got it?
I got it. Oh. The most expensive game ever made.
Okay.
I got it.
Let's do it.
Okay, so you buy the game. It comes with a 3D printer.
Okay, great. Go. Yes, I'm with you. I'm on board.
So in the 3D printer are several different chambers.
Okay.
They are obscured.
Okay.
And there are different ways to get things into different chambers.
Okay.
So it's like a 3D printer, but it's got like this Rubik's Cube style box that's attached to it.
Okay.
And some of the chambers, so each of the chambers has like a scanner in it. So it can scan whatever in that chamber and then 3D print it.
Okay. So you have the printer and you have a separate box with 3D scanners in it in different chambers.
Yeah, they're going to scan.
One for each chamber.
Yes.
Okay.
So this game costs a lot of money.
Yeah. Tens of thousands of dollars.
The 3D printer is like $1,200.
Yeah.
You can get them cheap now, but
the 3D scanners.
3D scanner box.
And the magic box.
Probably. Yeah. It's magic, but no, go with me on this.
Okay, I'm with you.
So the goal of the game is to get your stuff printed, right?
Okay.
So you want to get your stuff into the certain spots that you know, and then get the coordinates for that box entered. Think of it like that movie Cube.
Yeah.
So there, each cube had like a coordinate where it was in the cube.
Right.
Sorry, spoiler alert. Whatever.
Yeah, it's an old movie. It's fine.
So you do it that way, right?
Uh-huh.
And you're trying to get your coordinates into this 3D printer to get it to print your miniature that represents something you're going to do.
Okay.
Right? So eventually the miniature is going to end up on your board doing something for you. But before that, it's different.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still not with it.
Why?
I don't know.
It's different though, right? I mean, it's a different idea.
It's a very different idea.
Oh.
No, okay, all right. I feel like There should be something else we can do.
Hey,
with a miniature.
I just want to point out, AJ, if you're listening right now, yeah. I just thought of a game more expensive than your game, your wing leader
so, game. Right, yes. That's true.
Just occurred to me. This is expensive. Way more expensive than some magnifying glass. Yeah. So right. There's that. Yeah, I just
That's a tough nut. It's a tough nut.
I like my idea, though. I think it'd be a fun game. Because, right. Like, you're waiting. You're like, I don't know what's going to come out of there.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to come out? You know, maybe you have it so, like, a lot of the miniatures, like, from the base up look the same, or several of them look the same. So, like, as it's printing from the base up, you have to, like, somebody might have the ability to stop the print, but they have to know if it's theirs or not. Whoa. Oh, sure, yeah, it just makes a new track.
Right. So, we had another little technical difficulty there. Sorry that we cut off there instantly. My computer crashed, another big fat blue screen of death. It's the second time we've had this happen. But on the plus side, we learned that Audacity, the software that we use to record this, is awesome.
Yes.
Yes. Last time it crashed, we were using Cubase, and we had to go back and find the files, and it was a mess for me to stitch it back together. But Audacity, I loaded it right back up, and it recovered right away.
It was like, hey, auto recovery.
Dude, you lost this. Do you want it back? Yes, please.
We said, yes, we do. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I think we're about done with that discussion.
We're about done. So, I mean, I think our verdict right now, mm-hmm. listeners, we'd love it if you prove us wrong, because yeah. we would really like some better ideas. Right now, our verdict is, mechanically speaking, miniatures work best as a placeholder. And, you know, they can have information on them. They can do mm-hmm. different things, but... pretty much there's just always something sitting on the board. And unless my 3D Rubik's Cube printer is ever made, mm-hmm. I hope it is. Mm-hmm. If it is, then we got a game here.
Oh, grand idea. Okay, real quick. Okay. Sorry, this just hit me. All right. Let's say you have an army of miniatures, okay? And each miniature has like a weapon point, like a spear or sword, something, and those attack different levels, high and low, or high, middle, low. Okay. Plus, every miniature is holding a shield of some kind that can defend high, middle, or low. All right. And then every miniature also has three targets on it: high, middle, and low target. You each secretly take out a miniature and put it on the board. Maybe take out three miniatures and put it on the board. Put them on some kind of a grid, and then you reveal at the same time. Okay. And then you attack high, medium, or low based on where their defense is, where their attack is, whatever. Okay? Am I making sense?
Yeah.
So you have like a set of like 12 miniatures. You put three out to start with. Those three then go away, and then you can pick the next three, right? And so you're just basically going through rounds, or anybody who dies is no longer available for the next pick.
Well, then it would even be cooler if they die, they went away.
Yeah.
But if not, they stay. And then you, like, next to that, you build three more.
There you go.
So you maybe have a little screen, and you're allowed to take that miniature and put wherever. So you're going to end up with an extra miniature every time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like war.
Yeah.
It really is, except for it's not random.
Right. Nailed it.
You did. We need...
Nailed it.
What okay. we need is to crash your computer every week.
Right.
Because then you're like, pants, I got an idea.
Okay. All right. So that's... There it is. If any publishers out there want to get into the miniature business, I hear it's real popular on Kickstarter. Let's do it.
I'm just saying if the miniatures were scantily clad...
Hey, you know.
You just made $10 million.
Right.
It's a true story.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Okay.
All right.
I cracked that wide open. Now let's stop talking about it because we're running low on time and you need to practice your pitch, sir.
I do. Okay, so a little intro to this pitch. I pitched a game many, many moons ago, back in probably October of last year. I'm guessing that, maybe even November. I pitched a game called Conservator versus Developer. On our year-end show, Rob talked about how that was his favorite game that I pitched.
And really liked it a lot.
I made a proto of it. We played it. It played really, really well. But... The theme kind of fell flat.
Yeah.
The theme was about a national park type place where, like, you're fighting to do development versus conserving nature.
Right.
But the issue was the theme really fell flat on the game, and there was no replayability.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a little, because you could swap, but...
Yeah. It's tough, though.
Yeah. So I really... But the game was very simple, and it just played very well, and...
Mm-hmm.
What actually started me with this was we were talking about the Cards Against Humanity Deathmatch.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of a game to pitch to that that was simple and was, you know, easy to play, easy to learn, not too hard to produce, and Rob and I were going back and forth, and Rob said, "What about?" I think you said, "What about conservative versus developer?"
Yeah,
with a retheme. And I was like, "Yeah, but I can't think of a retheme." And I said, "I want something with more factions. First of all, I want to be able to have more groups that you can play as rather than just conservative developer."
Yeah.
And then Rob said the smartest thing he's ever said, ever.
Pretty much. I'm a genius.
And I'll be honest, when Rob first gave me this idea, we both kind of felt bad about it because it was such a good idea. But I believe on the next episode, we'll get to feel unbad about it because
right.
I was able to
again.
Give Rob an awesome idea for a theme.
Yeah. We're here to help each other.
We are. Right. Yeah. Right. So the theme was toys in a sandbox. Now you're like, what's that about? Well, so here's the idea. The game board is a sandbox and you have play sets and or factions of toys. And you control a group of 20 of them, 10 different ones, and two copies of each, mm-hmm. and use that to try and control the board. Let's really get into the pitch here. But anyways, it's entirely, like, expandable forever, like, mm-hmm. infinitely expandable. And replayability went through the roof. And the playtests have shown that. But let's get into the meat of the pitch here. So yeah. The name of the game is Sandbox Showdown, at least for now. The idea is... it's an area control game. It's a board game. Right now, it's played with cards. It eventually will be played with tiles. The board is set up as a 6x5 grid. Players facing each other. It's a dueling game, still two players, and you're just trying to control as much of the board as possible by playing toys onto the board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the purpose of the game is to control the most part of the board, right? So the way the game is played. Is you get your playset and you choose that however you want. Right now there are four playsets, as I said, and those four playsets are space toys, and the artwork design is specifically 1950s space toys.
Yeah,
so they're very cool,
like old like 50s style tin toys and things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
In addition to that, a farm playset that's probably closer to circa the 70s or 80s,
mm-hmm.
That kind has of things like pigs and pens and tractors and that kind of
little
stuff.
Little plastic things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a fairy tale playset, and mm-hmm. the fairy tale playset is based on, you know, the knights that you've seen, like the metal knights, like it's like a toy, but it's basically like a metal knight on a platform holding a sword. Right.
Sure.
And he's all one color. I thought it would be cool to have things like that, but they were multicolored, right? Like they were painted like normal,
mm-hmm.
but they had that style to them.
Sure.
So that's what I'm going for with that one. And then the final set is what I'm calling the constructor set. Basically, it's an erector set,
mm-hmm.
but I can't say that word because I don't own the rights to that. But it's right. that type of building set that's made out of metal and
right.
specifically like the 1960s style where it was really dangerous metal and such. So those are your four options when you play. And again, there's 10 different toys in each playset. And with those toys, there are two copies of each. So you've got your 20 tile deck. They're 2x2 inch tiles.
Mm-hmm.
To those cards to play them, they cost marbles. That is the also Rob's idea, but that was the currency in the game because conservative versus developer used. The currency of just money.
Yeah.
And it felt really weird because like these things, like the numbers you had to place on it, but with marbles, it's like there's no basis for like how to compare that to real world.
Sure.
Because it's kids with marbles.
Yeah.
Every turn you get 5 marbles to spend.
Uh-huh.
You can spend them however you like. You can save some and you'll get 5 more the next turn. And there are things that give you more marbles. You can never have more than 10 at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a little counter that goes from 0 to 10. When you hit 10, even if you would have had 12, you're done. So yeah, each toy that you play has a cost on it, which that cost is anywhere right now from 0 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that cost is how many marbles you have to pay to lay them on the board. Each player has a starting square, which is your side of the board, the long ways, on the right corner. That's where they both are.
Mm-hmm.
Once you play a toy in that square, you can then play a toy in any square that's adjacent to that square, which, you know, would be three squares at that point, right?
Sure.
And then when you play in the next square, now there are 8 squares that are adjacent to that center square that you're on. So as you can see, you can move pretty quickly in the game.
Yeah.
Now, the game is priced, so you generally can't play more than one figure a turn. Sometimes you can, but it doesn't happen very often. The idea is that it's priced so that you can't just go gangbusters right away.
Yeah.
You start with 5 cards, At the beginning of the game, you're dealt five of your tiles. Sorry. The prototype is cards. The real prototype will be tiles, so I still say cards sometimes. But you're dealt the five tiles at the beginning of the game. Anytime you want to draw another tile, it's going to cost you one marble.
Sure.
I did that because I like you having to kind of make the hard decisions as to, should I spend that marble to get a card or should I save it for next round?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's an easier decision than others. You can never have more than five tiles in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So,
sure.
Also, the cards, each toy has a unique power that allows it to maybe move to a new square or allows it to destroy another toy that's on the board or all sorts of different things. A good one is the pig pen. The pig pen, when you play that, it says that cards cannot be cards cannot be played adjacent to it. Enemy cards, because it stinks, right?
Sure.
So I lost my train of thought. If this doesn't happen at least once during a pitch for me, it's like it's not a real
pitch.
Both
of us, basically, yeah.
Right, it does happen with both of us, yeah. So, there are three types of cards. I'm sorry. So your toys, they break into three types. Figures, locations, and vehicles.
Okay.
And those are kind of loose, broad terms. Like the pig pen, that really could be a location or a figure, but it's a figure because I try and have, in most play sets, the kind of the base number is five figures, three locations, two vehicles. But then, of course, some play sets kind of break that rule a little bit, right? Because that's the
part
point
of, the fun.
Of having the different play sets.
Part of the fun, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the idea. And you try and control as much of the board as possible. Now, the game ends right now on three separate occasions cause the game to end.
Okay.
One, the game ends immediately when the last square is filled. So if there's 30 squares. If you fill the last one, boom, game's done. Person with the most things on the board wins.
Okay.
Second, it's the start of your turn, and there are no legal places for you to play a figure.
Sure.
Now, maybe you could do something by moving. Doesn't matter. You can't play something on the board. You can't play a tile on the board. You don't have to play a tile, but if you can't, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the game ends. Sorry, you don't lose, but the game ends.
Game ends.
You could win. And the third way is, at the start of your turn, there are no tiles left in your deck and no tiles left in your hand. So you could actually be out of tiles in your deck and have one in your hand, and you could hold that for the entire rest of the game.
And keep it going.
Right, to keep it going. Usually because you're, say, trying to eliminate tiles that your opponent is controlling because they're winning.
Sure.
What's cool, I guess, about the strategy is, and I can't remember if this happened in the game you and I playtested, Rob, or one of the other many playtests I did, but there was a game where I was just dominating. I mean, I had total control of the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, as they were about to put their last card down on the spot, because the next turn, when it got back to them, their game would be over, I was going to lose, because they had filled more spaces than I had.
Mm-hmm.
But I was blocking off a large portion of the board that was just empty, and I hadn't played anything in it.
Oh.
And I was like, oh,
whoops.
Crap. So I actually had to backtrack, open spaces up for them, and feed them spaces as I backfilled. And I ended up winning, but it makes the strategy a little more difficult,
yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
Yeah. I also experienced something in this game that I've never experienced before, which is a first turn win.
Oh.
I actually had a scenario where just the right cards fell into place. It's one of those things that I can't even figure out what the percentage is on it, but ridiculously small, where you got the exact number of cards. You were the first player to go, and I was able to end the game on turn two. Sorry, turn two. Like, play these tiles, play this, and boom, and I won. It's never happened since. Never happened again, but it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, so you do have to pay attention to how this could work.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
And that made me start looking at the cards, because the problem is, with a game like this, the number one thing is balance.
Yeah,
you have to balance these play sets to be equal, and they have to play well against each other. And when that happened, I said, okay, I need to look and see if there are other instances where this can happen in the game. And there were.
Yeah.
So I had to tweak those things to make it so that those weren't, because there were some where it was like actually really easy if the person just thought about it for a minute.
Yeah.
And none of the people I'd played with hadn't occurred to them that they could do it this certain
sure.
way and basically ruin the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Break it.
Yeah, exactly. They would just break the game that way. So that's where I'm at right now with the game.
Okay.
We did record a playtest of it. The game has changed a lot since then.
Okay.
there's one other thing I was going to mention. On the board, in certain squares on the board, there are marbles.
Yeah.
And if you play on that square, you get those marbles into your pool immediately.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody removes you from that square and takes the square from you, they get it. You can just trade it back and forth.
And you don't get it every turn. You get it when you take the square.
Exactly. Yes, okay. Correct. There, for instance, there's a card called the Harvester in the farm. And his thing is he has to move every turn one square. If he doesn't move, he blows up. So because of that, you can actually put him in a spot where he can just drive around and just keep picking up marbles as he goes. And that forces the opponent to have to deal with him.
Right.
And the reason I did that is because he was originally a card where nobody cared. If you didn't get him out in the beginning of the game, he was worthless.
Right.
Now he's not so worthless.
Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned or not, you know, each toy has a power, like I said.
Yeah.
Some of those powers to be activated cost marbles.
Sure.
So if I want to move my tractor two squares forward or in any direction, I have to pay four marbles. And a lot of the rules based around occupied and or unoccupied squares, mm-hmm. meaning you can do something to an occupied square, you can do something to an unoccupied square. And the base rules of the game, I played with five or six different people during my playtest, and I've been able to teach them the game in about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just a learning process as you go of realizing combos you can pull off, and it's cool when they realize a combo you can pull off that I didn't necessarily think of when I was designing. Or even it's gratifying when you see them go, oh, and they start to pull off a combo that I came up with, you know, and I'm like, all right.
Yeah, they figured it out.
And, you know, one of the things we've talked about that I feel like I'm pretty good at as a game designer is coming up with variable player powers rather mm-hmm. quickly. And a game like this really lets me play to that strong suit.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that a lot about it. Now, the one thing I was going to ask you about was that I'm a little not sure what to do with is, I played it with my wife, and she immediately suggested it would be cool if the cards had point values.
Sure.
So it's not just about area control. It's about who has the highest value cards on the board at the end, and those points actually determine the winner. So here's the bonus to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You make the best cards that you have the lowest point value, and the worst cards that you have the highest point value. So that does two things. One, it makes your opponent have to think about... what do I want to destroy? Do I want to destroy the threatening cards
mm-hmm.
that aren't worth much? Or do I want to destroy the not so great cards that are worth a ton?
Yeah.
You know, and they range from 1 to 5 with 60 points possible in every deck. So it's exactly the same
sure.
for everyone. And it was interesting. We tried it that way and I liked it. My one concern with that is I don't want to overcomplicate it. Like area control being the only real mechanic that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only goal in the game. So simple.
Yeah.
So clean. But I see it the other way. So you have any thoughts on that? Having played, you played the regular way,
right? Yeah. Well, you know, the first time you brought that idea up to me, I thought, oh, hell, man, that's a great idea. But then I stepped away from it. I thought, well, but I mean, it's kind of it changes the whole focus of what got me interested in the whole idea in the first place. It's
right.
that it wasn't about points; it was about control. And I feel like keeping it just about control maybe is a little bit more of a pure experience, kind of a cleaner, like you said, simpler, but I would use the term cleaner and more focused
right.
Goal for how the game is played. I mean, if it works better with points, then it works better with points. If it's friendlier to players, then maybe you just need to do that.
Well, then that was her thing was
mm-hmm.
there was the first couple of games we played. It was pretty obvious that I was going to be the winner pretty quickly into the game. Not her fault. I've been playing the game a lot, right?
Yeah, sure.
And even trying to hold back, like, you know, I mean, I like to play the right way. And so I was making very good moves. And it was, for someone learning, it was tough. And, you know, so,
yeah.
And it got me thinking, you know, in a game like this, you're going to have people that are going to be very good at the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are people that understand miniatures games and stuff like that. It's just going to come easier to them.
Yeah.
And for those people, they're going to want the pure area control experience. Now, for the other people who have maybe a more learning curve to that, they're going to rather have the, you know, I stand a better chance of winning, you know, by default, right? But...
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe an alternative to that is to say that, you know, if you control more area, then you automatically get bonus points. On top right. of the tile values.
And I wondered, too, if there could be a rule that says if you have areas surrounded, like like you surround an area, no one else can play in that area, like mm-hmm. they're not adjacent to it, you get a point for that being occupied. Does that sound? That might be a cleaner way to handle it. So basically that might mean mm-hmm. I could go out and make a wall. And if I could get that wall five across before you get past it,
yeah.
I now own all those squares behind me.
Hmm.
But if
at the end of the game.
Yeah. 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 Because if I break right. through, then of course, you know, right. I mean, if you break through my wall, then it doesn't matter. But I feel like I like that a little better only because what I don't want is, because for instance, when the few games I've played with the numbers being attached to it, there was a point in the game where I was like, I'm going to win this game. They're beating me right now. Their numbers are way better than mine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to win this game. And in the end, I won the game. They felt like they had a chance to win. But it was clear, being, you know, designing the game and watching it played, they were not going to win.
Hmm.
So it's, is the illusion of, I might win, is like, is that worth putting in the game? Just to give people that happy feeling of, I think I can win? Not like saying, like, in general, like, I'm just great at this game. I mean, mm-hmm. I've played it a lot, right? But what I'm saying is, like, against any player, do you want the illusion that you could win? Because if you realize it's just an illusion.
Well, but you're talking about that only for new players. I mean, anybody who got experience with it would know realistically what's happening here, probably.
True.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Well, I mean, that's a tough question. I don't think we can necessarily answer that question right now. It's the kind of thing that, I think you just need to put it in front of people in different ways and say, what do you think if?
Right.
What do you think if?
Catches I have to a prototype really soon. And I don't know whether or not to put these numbers on it. Because I don't really want to put the numbers on it if I'm not going to do it.
Well, it wouldn't hurt to put the numbers on there and say, you know, hey, it's still prototype. We're going to play this. We're going to ignore those numbers. I'm not even going to tell you what they mean.
That's true.
You know, you could even lie and say, well, that's the number of the tile or something. I don't know.
Nice.
You know.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to start testing it with this control idea, though, that if I surround an area
mm-hmm.
and you can't, you know, I have it surrounded,
yeah.
then I win it.
Okay.
Because it's a different strategy, but it still is area control, right? I mean,
right.
it's still pure area control right. that way.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
I like it.
All right.
Well, I mean, I like it. Of course, I was the one who was trying to make you do it. So, right. of course, yes, I like yeah. it.
Thanks to Rob for yeah. forcing me to work on this.
Yeah. So. Sandbox Showdown.
Yes. Name okay. might change, but for now, that's what we're going
that's
with.
That's what we're going with. Okay. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. The area control, it feels real natural to me.
And if you yeah. guys, if you follow me on Twitter, which Rob will say the Twitter later, mm-hmm. I've been posting pictures for it from my artist, Brandon yeah. Keough. He's a great guy. He does some awesome art. And the art's a lot of fun. So check it out when you get a chance. I think we're good with this part, though. We can move okay. on.
All right. We want to hit up a couple quick plugs here at the end of the show. Number one, we want to remind everybody about GrandCon. That's an exciting new gaming and comic book convention that's coming to Grand Rapids this year. It is going to be September 20th through 22nd, 2013, at the Calvin College Prince Conference Center in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Go to their website, grand-con.com, to check it out. We're going to be there. We're going to be having a game design panel, and we're going to be having an awesome time. We'll be there all 3 days. So come on out and say hi and play some awesome games, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to have a panel and we're going to have a booth, and we strongly recommend that you come there.
Absolutely. We also want to remind you about our events at Gen Con this year. We've got three things happening, starting with our Podcasting 101 panel. That's in the Gen Con event listing stuff. The ID for that is SEM1342722. That's going to be on Friday at Gen Con at 2 p.m. Come on out and see us and meet us, and we're going to be talking about kind of our experience getting a podcast up and running. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast or curious about what it took for us to get started, that's kind of what we're talking about. You know, talking about kind of the problems we had, like, you know, like our system crashed today, and some of the technology that we use, some hiccups, just kind of our experience along the way.
Yep.
Next thing we're going to do is our First Time Game Designers Workshop panel. That's the ID for that one is SEM1342723. That's going to be on Friday at 4 o'clock.
And that is free.
That is totally free. Yeah, but all these events are free.
But especially for this one, get your tickets for it because...
selling out quick.
It is. So, and I mean, I know that technically you don't have to have a ticket to come in, but it may run out of space. I mean, tickets are over half gone. We had 100 and... They're over half gone already, which is kind of awesome.
It's crazy. We're shocked.
In the coming weeks, in the next month or so here, we'll start announcing
some of our guest
designers who are going to be in that workshop with us, and it's going to be some good people. You guys are going to be excited.
Yeah, can't wait for that. And then, of course, the big one for us, the really big show, game ID is SEM1342720, Building the Game Live. We're going to do
going to be great.
Yeah, 2-hour live show. We're going to do a whole episode of the show. We're going to record it right there on location at Gen Con. We're gonna talk about what we've been playing at the show. We're going to talk to people in the audience about what they've been playing. And we are going to, with the help of the audience, with you guys who are going to come see us, we're going to take suggestions and try and come up with a game idea, design a whole game from scratch right there live while everybody's in the room with us. And we're really excited about it. We are thrilled, and we want you to come. Once again, get your ticket online. You're not going to need it to get in the door. Tickets are free, but if you can register for that in advance, give us a better idea of how many people are going to come. We can be better prepared for the show. So come check us out.
Please do. One more thing I wanted to bring up. So an opportunity presented to me was to go to Origins this year, which I did not know I was going to do until a few days ago, and I found out for sure. And so so I'm going to be at Origins. I'm only going to be there Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Mm-hmm. I'm not hosting any events or anything. I'll probably be spending a lot of time in the Unpub area, which I believe is in the board game room or the board room. I think they call it the board room.
The board room.
Again, I've never been to Origins before, so this is kind of a surprise trip. And so I'll be there. If you're going to be there, tweet me or leave us a comment or something. I would love to meet any listeners going to be there. I definitely have some freebies that I can hand out while I'm there. So, just let me know. I hope it's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. Come find Jason. He will take a picture with you.
With or without my glasses, it's up to you.
I say without because it's pretty awful. It's pretty awful. All right, then that's going to wrap us up here for tonight. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to the show. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to, you can check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can leave a comment on there that we promise we will read on the show if you send it. You can also follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. And if you want to follow us individually, Jason is at JASlingerland, and I am at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook, get us to 100 likes, and we will send you out a print and play of, looks like it's going to be Water Balloon Washout, depending on what happens.
You guys are running out of time.
You quickly are running out of time. So hurry up and get those 100 likes on Facebook. You can also give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and we will be ever, ever, ever grateful for that. And am I forgetting anything?
No.
Okay. Then that is it, and you guys have a fantabulous evening.
Good night.
Thanks again. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game. Waka, waka, waka.